From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson.
Come, you masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs.
Our connection this hour is made on October 13th, just 5 days ago, when the Swedish Academy announced that they had selected songwriter Bob Dylan for the Nobel Prize in Literature. The committee commended Dylan for, quote, having created a new poetic expression within the great American song tradition, end quote. The award brought a wave of celebration from the music community, sure, but also from fans of great writing in general. They celebrated a Nobel Prize that broke with the norms to make a statement that popular music can, in fact, be a source of literature. And then, of course, there was a backlash. Did Dylan deserve the award? What about all the wonderful writers who are not so well known, but are no less talented? Why give the award to someone who already has fame? There are questions about how music fits as literature. Do we separate the lyrics from the music and evaluate the lyrics on their own? Or is it impossible to decouple the lyrics from the music? And finally, if Bob Dylan is deserving, are there other songwriters who might one day land such a prize? Joni Mitchell, Leonard Cohen, someone else? We should mention that Dylan himself has been quiet on this. In fact, Time magazine reported last night the Swedish Academy has now given up on trying to reach Bob Dylan. He has not personally replied to phone calls or emails from the committee. I'm sure he'll get around to it eventually. Our panel has a variety of perspectives on the Bob Dylan selection, and let me welcome them now. John Kovach is the director of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Also here is Roy Stein, the director of the Music Business Program at Nazareth College. He's also part of a band called My Plastic Son. Roy, welcome to you.
Thank you, Evan.
Chad Post is here, publisher of Open Letter Books. Hi, Chad.
Hello.
And on the phone with us is James McCorkle. He's an assistant professor of Africana Studies at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. James, welcome to you as well.
Hi there.
And I will say the fifth person on this panel, he's not really going to stay, though he could. Randy Gorbin, you could run this conversation.
I'm not as much of an aficionado as these guys, but I am a Dylan fan.
This
is my connection show.
You're a Dylan
Elections,
fan.
Elections, news, and Dylan.
I know. I could have just taken a walk for 2 hours.
This is great.
Yeah, and Randy actually helped pull some of the music catalog for this hour. So very
good. I have different opinions on this, and I'm not going to share them right now, but it's going to be a great discussion.
Well, and I know you're here for a different reason. What's going
on? I'm here because this is the kind of programming you're not going to hear on your commercial stations, you're not going to hear or see on a lot of websites, but you're going to hear it on public radio, and that is why we are coming to you this week, looking for your support. At WXXI, we hold these membership drives pretty seldomly, I think, especially compared to a lot of other public stations around the country, but to put on the show, to do the research, to have the staff, not to mention all the work that goes into election coverage, which we talked about last hour, we need your support. So please donate what you can. 454-6300, 454-6300. If you're out of the area, 1-800-295-9994. That's 1-800-295-9994. Or you can make it with your WXXI app or online at WXXI.org. And if you don't donate, a hard rain is going to fall.
Oh, okay. There you go. Good job, Randy Gorbin. Randy Gorbin, WXXI News Director. Let's just start with the panel. There's not full agreement on this, and there's some full-throated yes, some qualifications. I'm going to start with Chad Post. Bob Dylan gets the Nobel Prize in Literature. Should he have gotten the award?
You have to make me the villain first, right?
I do.
You have to set up the villain to be able to come at.
Any good story establishes a villain.
So I'm going to say openly that I'm not a huge Bob Dylan fan, but I like Bob Dylan. I respect what he does. I respect him as a songwriter, as a lyricist. But I do wish that the Nobel Prize for Literature continued to be given to someone that is a purely literary writer, especially someone that's part of the world literature conversation as it exists. And I have a few different qualifications to this. One is that I think that what's important to the discussion going forwards is looking at what we expect out of the Nobel Prize for Literature. There's always talk of like who hasn't received it, who has passed over at various points in time. And I don't know that that's necessarily useful. There's usually a perspective that the Nobel Prize is given to the quote unquote best writer in the world at that moment. And that's not really what it's for either. But I've always seen it as something over the past decade that functions as, or more than that, but especially the past decade that I've been working in publishing, 15 years now, past 15 years I've been working in publishing, as something that helped to take an important world voice of literature and make them well-known and get them into the conversation. The way that like Svetlana Alexeyevich, who happened to be an author that I edited and worked with in a previous job, when she won last year, that was perfect because she was a fantastic writer that had a lot to say about Russia, about Chernobyl, about oral histories, and was able to get into the global conversation. I don't know that Bob Dylan winning adds anything to the global conversation about literature per se. It might in the sense of like, does songwriting count as literature? But I'm not sure about that. I also think there are a lot of people that that I would rather have seen win. And I think that by choosing a songwriter, it sort of goes to this fetishization of lyrics as poetry, where people aren't going to know that Bob Dylan won and then go out and subscribe to Poetry Magazine or read a collection of poetry. They're going to be like, oh, I can listen to this music that I'm already listening to on all the commercials like Pepsi and Chobani or whatever else that Dylan has sold his songs to.
Don't you call Bob Dylan a sellout, Chad. You really will establish yourself as a villain. Okay, so in other words, you agree with Stephen Metcalf, who writes the following in Slate Magazine Online. Quote, Bob Dylan is a genius, and for his genius, he's been rewarded in every way. With fame, money, acclaim, he deserves all of it, but he doesn't deserve the Nobel.
Exactly.
All right, Roy Stein, what do you think?
Well, you know, as well as being the music director at Nazareth, I'm also an attorney, so I'm going to look at the language that the Nobel Committee uses to decide, because I think that's important. And they state, and this is, you know, what they've used for 115 years, the person who shall have produced in the field of literature the most outstanding work in an ideal direction. Now, that's so ambiguous, you know, outstanding work in an ideal direction. It kind of, what do we mean by ideal direction? Huh? And then it says, according to the Academy in Stockholm, who oversees this, these statutes define literature as not only belles lettres, but also other writings which, by virtue of their form and style, possess literary value. So I find it hard to argue that his style doesn't possess literary value. And if you want to look at the definition of belles lettres, it's really a beautiful, an end in itself, not merely informational. So I think there is just such a huge body of work that Dylan has produced, right? 37 studio albums, close to 400 songs, you know, some of it very surrealistic. It combines really, I mean, the full historic, you know, panorama of Western civilization. He goes back to biblical quotes. You know, he quotes authors and writers all through, you know, the 20th century. So I see him is a really unique lyricist. I mean, a standalone lyricist who has transcended the traditional lyricist field. You know, you can look at great lyricists of the 20th century, right? You know, you can, and I wrote a couple down that immediately came to me. You know, you can look at Hal David, you know, who did all those wonderful things with Burt Bacharach. You can look at Bernie Taupin if you want to use contemporary people. You can look at Oscar Hammerstein if you want to go back into the 30s and 40s. Dylan is different from them in a way that's really hard to explain. Although these people were geniuses, Dylan, there's something transcendental, I think, about his writing. So I'm not, and having said all this, I'm not a huge fan. I was born in 1955. I didn't buy a Dylan record till 1995. So he's not somebody that I was, you know, in love with growing up. But there's been so many times in my life I've heard one of his lyrics on the radio and it was just profound. I felt it was stunning. Some of it was Dada-esque and surreal and would make me laugh, you know, like the sun ain't yellow, it's chicken. And I'm like, whoa, you know, you're messing with me, Bob. You know, okay, you just shifted me a little bit, right? And it's somewhat, that's Lennon-esque almost, that's cuckoo-cuckoo kind of stuff. But then he would do these traditional folk storytelling, but bring it into the 21st century so powerfully. And then you look at something like Blowing in the Wind or Forever Young, which is just, I mean, it just takes you to the basics, I think the basics of what it means to be a human being. So I do think he's incredibly unique. I don't think we're going to be seeing someone 7 or 8 years ago. And I have many reasons why I would not compare somebody who I do adore, like a Patti Smith or a Conor Oberst, Bright Eyes. I wouldn't compare them in any way to Dylan. I think his work, it's just so much more complete.
So this doesn't open the floodgates for others
in
the genre?
I don't see it in any way.
You think he's a standalone?
I think he's a phenomenon of the last 50 years of the 20th century. And again, this is funny for me because I'm not a fan. You know, but I just look at it and I say, it's just standalone.
Hmm. Okay. Well, he mentioned Blown in the Wind. Maybe we'll just lay that. We got enough Dylan music, we can lay it underneath us and torture Chad Post. I'm just kidding. Chad, I'm being so unfair to Chad. I think Chad's perspective is incredibly valuable here and shared by a lot of academics, by the way. But John Kovach, as the director of the Institute for Popular Music, you gave a thumbs up to this selection. How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, I take Chad's point entirely. I mean, I really have no view on whether or not songwriting should be part of an award on literature. I mean, really, who am I to say? I'm a music scholar, and I don't know really enough about the world of literature in the professional world that Chad moves in to be able to have really anything more than just a shooting from the hip kind of opinion about that. But so, you know, what we've heard from Chad and Roy are really two different kinds of arguments. From Chad, it's like, well, you know, Dylan may be awesome, and this is a lot of what you read online. Dylan may be awesome, but, you know, this really isn't an award for songwriters. So the question you frame there is, well, could songwriting ever be a possible thing for the, and I think your argument probably, no, not really. Dylan, no, it doesn't matter how good the songwriter. So there's no real
question. It's just
question.
A different thing, right?
Roy's point is more like, well, if there was going to be one, Dylan should be it for all kinds. And that's another kind of argument one could have. Are there others who have been deserving in the past? And from my point of view, I can say that, I mean, Chad's got a list of 12 songwriters. I mean, these are the kinds of things that people say, well, if, you know, if the argument is like Roy says, well, maybe it's fine that it should be a songwriter, but here are some others who might have gotten it or who should get it in the future. And the interesting thing is that the entire list that you read to me is people who have written songs since Bob Dylan. So this entire idea of the construction of the songwriter as a performer, as an author with a voice, is really kind of constructed by Dylan and many others, the Beatles, Brian Wilson, others during the 60s. But Dylan is the lead figure there. This idea of what we think a songwriter is constructed by Dylan in the 60s, and he carries it through. So as a historical influence, it's very hard to argue that the body of work has not had a very, very deep impact in our culture. Maybe not so much in literary circles. A lot of the things that Roy's talking about that touch him about Dylan's songs have touched a lot of people about poetry for centuries. So it isn't that his music has some, his lyrics have some special ability to touch people that others don't. It's that's certainly the case. I would say that, I mean, if I were going to say, well, who else, if you were going to have a songwriter win this, who else might have been considered? I have to say, hands down, the living songwriter who should be considered along with Dylan is probably Stephen Sondheim. And people don't usually think about musical theater that way, but here's a guy, Sondheim, who in a very self-conscious way, almost virtuosic way, works in the conventions of standard literature and poetry. Maybe to my taste, so self-conscious that it's a little bit distracting. It's a little too clever by half a lot of the time, but still enormously accomplished. Sondheim has won a Pulitzer for Sunday in the Afternoon in the Park with George, 1985. Would he be somebody who might follow in Dylan's footsteps, say, at some future time? I don't know.
Well, let me turn to our other guest. James McCorkle is on the line with us, Assistant Professor of Africana Studies at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Those are three different perspectives on this award. James, where do you fall?
Oh, my. Those are all wonderful perspectives, and it's kind of hard now to...
You got a bat cleanup now, man.
follow up on that. I'm kind of on the fence. I did an informal poll of my poet friends and literary critic friends, and actually they've fallen on the side of this is a good thing that Dylan has received the Nobel Prize. So I don't know if there's a great controversy. It's actually been a controversy that's been, As I think Chad brought up, something that's been rifling through poetry circles and literary circles for a long time. Well, when the student brings up, well, let's talk about, well, Bob Dylan, isn't that poetry? And then somebody has to think about the place of of music and accompaniment to the lyrics. But I look at the Nobel Prize in some ways as more close to Chad, that it's a chance, maybe selfishly, for me to see a window into another culture, another literary culture, sometimes not at all present, particularly in the United States, where translation is such a secondary art, and the need for translation is so important. I was thinking back to 1967, the death of Langston Hughes, an amazing poet, also amazing librettist, an amazing dramatist, memoirist, novelist, but poet. When he died, 1967, a great Guatemalan novelist, Miguel Asturias, received the Nobel Prize for Men and Maize and brought the life of the Mayan villages and Mayan culture into mainstream or into Hispanic literature, and then certainly laid the groundwork for the magic realism and Garcia Marquez and others following. So my point here is this prize is the one chance selfishly for those of us who are so provincial not to have access to the wealth of other national literatures to tap into that. That said, Dylan's Nobel also opens up the other side, is the possibilities of writing. And we're watching really an expansion of different modes of writing, different hybrid forms of writing, the visual qualities being brought into the book, the expansion of the idea of the book, which is partly an expansion of the idea of the voice. And in that way, the idea of what poetry is enlarged a bit, even though Dylan is clearly drawing on some of the deep roots and emotions that have propelled poets for a long time. So I'm kind of, why didn't Adonis, this great Syrian poet, 87 years old, how many more years does he have? Why doesn't he receive it? Or Ngugi wa Thiong'o, the great Kenyan novelist, isn't he due? But on the other hand, Dylan is expressing something that feelings that many people have. And that's something to be really, filled with wonder and joy with.
Well, let me turn to Chad Post there, because Chad, he mentioned a couple of names specifically. And that kind of piggybacked on the point that you made right off the top of the hour. We have a listener named Matt on Twitter who says, the first guest, Chad, expressed exactly his views on this. And just asking people online for a quick sample, people are all over the map on this. It's very interesting. Ben writes to us and says, I'm a big fan of Dylan. None of his music is literature. He deserves more Grammys, but not a Nobel Literature Prize. Daniel writes, you can't ask me, this is what I asked last night, if you believe he should have won the award, tell me what the best songs are in terms of literature. And Dan says, you cannot ask me this 2 minutes before I was planning on falling asleep. And Dan stayed up for a while to help us understand. He says, how about World War III blues? He gave a list of them. Only a Pawn in Their Game, When He Returns, Clothesline Saga are some of the lesser-known gems, just pointing out that it's not only the hits. I mean, I think that's one of the points Roy was making. It's decades worth of work. Mike says, Masters of War, Like a Rolling Stone, Forever Young, Jokerman, and Mississippi for today's top five. I mean, people are kind of going on and on and back and forth about this. But, Chad, one of your points off the top was you worried that there are so many voices out there, so many writers who don't have this level of fame, and this can be a platform for them, and they don't have it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of things that are interesting about this, I'm going to take a personal tact here on my reaction to the Nobel Prize every year. So one thing that you guys might not know is that generally the Nobel Prize for Literature is given out at a specific time during the Frankfurt Book Fair. It always coincides with Frankfurt Book Fair, which is the largest gathering of publishing people from throughout the world. Part of the reason is that once it's announced, all the rights are bought and sold that have not been published throughout the world, right? It's like it's very good for business sense. This was weirdly delayed a week, and it was announced before the Frankfurt Book Fair starts now. And part of the hush-hush reasoning was that there was a lot of discord within the Swedish Academy about whether or not to give it to Dylan, that it wasn't so much that they were tying it to the Frankfurt Book Fair, but perhaps there was a lot of back and forth. And there's, man, all of you guys brought up interesting things, so I'm going to go through a litany of things right here. One is, before this was announced, there's been a series of different kind of, there's always think pieces prior to the announcement of the Nobel Prize for Literature. For a while, after Horst Engdahl, who is the former permanent secretary and spokesperson for the Nobel Prize, said that an American would not win the Nobel Prize until there was more translation being done because American writers were not part of the global conversation about literature. There are only 3% of the books published in the U.S. are in translation. They're not part of this. They don't know what it is. Americans will not win. So there is a series of think pieces that were the like, I'm not reading the Nobel Prize until an American wins. Americans deserve to win. Don DeLillo deserves to win. Philip Roth deserves to win. Marilyn Robinson deserves to win. All these people deserve to win. And we're going to be mad about it until they do, because it's always some obscure Hungarian writer that we don't care about because it's not American. Now, the Nobel Prize Committee is famous for like not going back to countries very often, that after a country wins, they tend not to win again for a long time. Same thing will probably go with style things. So we talk about like who are the next people that could win as songwriters. It's probably very unlikely, not only because they're not unique enough, but because the Nobel Prize isn't going to be like, oh, we're just going to give it to a songwriter all the time. And what's weird about all of this is I think that on one level, I wonder if the Swedish Academy isn't either A, there are a lot of they're older white men that want to hang out with their hero, so they're inviting him to a big party, or B, they're just trolling us because America's like, we want Philip Roth. And they're like, oh, you want to win the Nobel Prize? Bob Dylan. How do you like that? That's your best writer. Which is
crazy.
That's
a dark conspiratorial thought.
But I wouldn't be surprised. And then all these hot takes come out from like the BBC culture page that is like the 12 songwriters who are worthy of the Nobel Prize. And I seriously think this is a joke, but it's not. It's written as a real thing where every one of these songwriters, except for one, is American or British. So it's all back to this like Anglo-centric focus, which goes against the spirit of the Nobel Prize.
Who do they have on
moment.
There, by the way? I mean, what are some of the examples?
Their 12 are Morrissey, Chuck D from Public Enemy, Kate Bush, Caetano Veloso, the foreign one, Gulzar, okay, maybe two, Patti Smith, Joni Mitchell, Nick Cave, Leonard Cohen, Stephen Sondheim, and Kanye West.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And most of those wouldn't, what I'm saying is that Dylan's influence is the way it almost unconsciously shapes people's thinking about what songwriting is. Nobody would write that if it had not been for Bob Dylan.
And you wouldn't say the same about the people that Chad just read off that list.
Absolutely not.
Well, Dylan is the one, although, Chad, I wonder if I can, I mean, we shouldn't all gang up on Chad here, but I'm just curious.
He can take it.
So when it comes to literature, I'm interested in sort of pushing the envelope on this. So drama or plays?
They win.
They count.
Oh, yeah. Harold Pinter won a few years ago, and that made total sense. It was controversial, as was Elfrieda Jelinek.
Well, Winston Churchill won.
Winston Churchill won decades ago.
For his oratory.
I mean, one of the things that's interesting to me about the whole conversation regarding Dylan winning as well, especially in the online Twitter, Facebook-er-verse, is that the people who are most adamantly in favor of him winning tend to have not read very many of the other names that are always mentioned as potential Nobel Prize winners. Which is weird than to discuss and analyze the nature of the award without having read the past winners or the current people that are being discussed for it.
You're missing the context. Yeah,
you're missing the context. So it's kind of, it's like a weird, the debate becomes skewed in this way in which like the position of one of these great writers, like happen to have Laszlo Krasznahorkai's book with me because I'm teaching it next spring and been finishing it. He's one of the ones that's always referenced as a Hungarian writer who deserves to win it. Absolutely, in my opinion, is worthy of being on that stage and being a Nobel Prize laureate. But I can guarantee that 99% of the people on Twitter or Facebook that are pro Bob Dylan have even heard of Laszlo Krasznahorkai. So it's kind of a weird. The context is lost, and there's something about it that gets skewed where the position that it should be a literary prize for one of these World Voices is automatically villainous and in the smaller percentile because it has this very rarefied knowledge. And then when it comes down to the songwriters, it still ends up being this weirdly anglo-centric.
And you're arguing thing. In kind of a vacuum, yeah.
Yeah.
John, go ahead. I'm pushing in the direction of the performative element of it, because one of the critiques is, well, if you just look at the lyrics without the rest of the song, that it really, you know, it's really about the way Dylan delivers it. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. It isn't just the lyrics.
Can you decouple it, John?
Well, I think it's...
Do you need the music?
I think you need Dylan's performance of it. And I think you need more than Dylan's performance of it. You need Dylan's entire construction of the persona who's supposed to be doing it. And so that this is almost becomes a kind of a theater, kind of oratory kind of thing. It's more than just lyrics to a song. Dylan constructs a series of very convincing characters then speak these particular songs. And I guess you could say Bruce Springsteen has constructed a character, but it's pretty much been the same one. And Madonna has changed characters, but there hasn't been the depth that goes with it. Bowie perhaps has changed characters. But again, we're talking about a guy who constructed this whole notion that a songwriter should be somebody who's wise. Nobody cared what Elvis Presley thought or Frank Sinatra thought. They were singers and not particularly songwriters. But even the great musicals, Oscar Hammerstein, people like that, I mean, those were meaningful, but in the context of a musical play and that kind of thing. But here we've got a guy who's constructing this whole thing, and it's more than just the songs and the lyrics, and it's more than the music. It's the character, it's the voice, it's the performative aspect of it. That, I think, is where the influence is. And then it comes a little bit closer to oratory, to plays, to these kinds of things, and maybe makes it a little more palatable, though overall less palatable, I realize.
Well, let me get Roy to jump in. Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree totally with John, but I still think Dylan's in a class of his own. I think the lyrics do stand alone. And, you know,
decoupled from the music.
Absolutely. You go to Barnes & Noble and you can, you know, buy your 350-page, you know, book of Dylan's lyrics. And I have one of those books. Even though I'm not much of a fan of his music, I am a fan of his lyrics. And reading them, some of the songs I don't even know, I read the lyrics and they speak to me like beautiful poetry. They speak to me like Allen Ginsberg or Wallace Stevens. I am just knocked out by the richness of the prose. So I think he does stand alone that way. And, you know, as far as comparing him to other lyricists, contemporary lyricists, I think Leonard Cohen summed it up best just a few days ago. He was asked what he thought about Dylan getting this award, and his quote, and I just have to read his quote because I just think it's right on. You know, he says essentially that Dylan getting this award is like pinning a medal on Mount Everest for being the highest mountain. So there's his contemporary, you know, and a well, you know, thought of lyricist across the board saying, look, Dylan stands alone. So I think he does. And I still have to fall back on you know, what is the Nobel Prize Committee supposed to be doing? And my understanding is only 3 or 4 or 5 people that are actually on this committee.
I think there's 16. And it's the slots are permanent until you die. So there are certain people who refuse to participate anymore, but their slots they can't be replaced until they pass away. And most of this was set up ages ago. So the age of the people that are on the Academy still is fairly mature.
Yeah, like Bob.
Yeah, and yeah.
Like Bob Dylan. But, I come back to this, and I understand, I mean, totally the publishing world wanting to have brilliant writers, traditional novelists from across the globe, mm-hmm. recognized because they're not known. But I don't see it as one of the qualifications for the Nobel Prize Committee to look for those. If that was in the criteria, I would say Bob shouldn't win this award. If that was in the criteria, and I don't see it in there. I see it historically being done, and it's something they've embraced, especially the past 10 years, for 15 years, from my understanding. But I don't see that as one of the criteria.
They're not known. That's a American perspective that I have to call into question, because they're not known to an American audience. They are very well known to wider audiences, including European audience, African audience, Asian audiences, people in Latin America, people who read books in translation like I do. These names are not unfamiliar.
Oh, right.
So just to make that clear, that is not that they're awarding people who are unknown. They're awarding people who are known within a certain context and raising that level.
All right, I have to jump in because we are late for our only break here. And as we go to break, let me go ahead and just read three bars, I guess, from Masters of War. We open the hour with Masters of War, which is when? When is that? When is that roughly from? Anybody know? When?
I'd say 64-ish. It's very early.
Just ask yourself if you feel like the theme, 50 years on, can translate as we talk about people in power using war as sort of a tool. He writes, like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe? But I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. Then you set back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion as young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled, fear to bring children into the world. For threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed, you ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. And I would just say, John Kovach, I take the point that his performance matters, but there are times where you can just read the lyrics.
The lyrics are powerful.
And not feel a chill. It's hard not to feel that kind of a chill. So let's just get our only break of the hour and come right back as we dive into Bob Dylan's Nobel Prize in Literature. Tremendous depth of perspectives from our four guests. And that's John Kovach, director of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester. Chad Post is the publisher of Open Letter Books. Roy Stein, director of the Music Business Program at Nazareth College. He's also part of the band My Plastic Son. And James McCorkle on the line, assistant professor of Africana Studies at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. This is our only break, and we're right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections. I know you've seen the Trump tape from Access Hollywood back in 2005. We want to have a conversation about what it means that so many Americans think that that is somewhat typical or common, a common way for men to speak. What does it say about our culture? How do we deal with that? How do we talk to children if they hear that kind of conversation? Join us on Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and what better way to welcome Randy Gorman back for a brief interruption with a little Dylan underneath it. We haven't heard enough Dylan this hour, for goodness sake. And Randy is a Dylan fan. Hi,
I'm just
Randy.
Listening. I'd rather just sit in the newsroom and listen, but we do need to pay the bills and to do the great things that we do with Connections. You know, we do a lot of serious topics. We do important topics for the community, like the elections and the political process, which has been, to say the least, eye-opening this year. But to do that, we need your support. And we are going to be accepting pledges all this week, but there aren't that many days before you know it. It's Friday, and we really need to make that goal. So you can call us right now at 454-6300. If you're a Dylan fan, if you're a Connections fan, if in general you're just a public radio fan, please help us support what we do here at 454-6300, or go online at wxxi.org/give, or with the WXXI app. Evan?
Thank you, Randy. Let's listen for just a moment here to Bob Dylan.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
This is one of those many Bob Dylan songs that gets covered by others, and Paul on Twitter says, I fall on the side of no Nobel for Dylan, and I think the best versions of his songs are done by others, Hendrix, the Byrds, etc. John Kovach, is that... Boy, that is apostasy to say.
I don't know whether that's a comment about Dylan's worthiness to receive. Everybody has things they like more than other things. You know, I mean, we've all got a right to an opinion. You know, I think the question really at hand is what makes Dylan special in the way that Roy's talking about it. And again, you know, yeah, he's poetic. Maybe you could even say that his lyrics are poetry. But are they great poetry? I guess I don't know enough poetry to say, but I can tell you that the impact of them is more than just the lyrics on the sheet. That if he wins, it's for the whole package. You were listening to Mr. Tambourine Man. If you think the Byrds version of Mr. Tambourine Man is a more compelling song than the Dylan version, then, well, we just differ.
Well, in a moment, we're going to hear some of the later stuff that Roy Stein, I think, was wise enough to point out, that this is not an artist whose material comes from a short burst of time. This is an artist who's being honored for a career's worth of work. And I want to remind you that our guests, by the way, I've corralled them in on their busy schedules. So I would be remiss if I didn't at least just step back for one second and mention there's a couple of things coming up this weekend. Open Letter Books, and Chad Post is from Open Letter Books. He's been the villain on the panel. And I'm going to be hanging out with Chad and the group on Friday night. You want to mention what's coming up on Friday night?
Yeah, on Friday we're having our second annual celebration of Rochester and Open Letter Books. It takes place at the German House starting at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $20 and up. We're going to give away copies of a book called The Greater Music by Bei Sua, future potential Nobel Prize laureate, perhaps. Just kidding. And then also, not kidding, she could be. And then we're going to have a number of Rochester visionaries, as we're calling them, speak about the future of Rochester and the role of arts and culture, including you, Evan. Leah Stacey was on here last week. Glenn Kellogg from Hearts, Kyle Semmel from Writers and Books, and Rachel Barnhart. So we're going to do all that. There's going to be a buffet from Buddha Pub. There will be a raffle. There will be palm readings that are free. Come down. It'll be a lot of fun. We also have playlists that are curated by all of our international authors. So it'll be a good time. It starts at 8 o'clock at the German House on Gregory.
That's Friday night. What's going up on Saturday? John Kovach is talking about Bob Dylan, but John is a music scholar who knows just about, I always think, everything about everything music. And he also performs music. And what I love is you have different themes throughout the year, different concerts. Yeah. What do you have coming up?
Well, we do this Institute for Popular Music show every fall and spring. This will be the seventh one that we've done so far. This one, the topic is country rock in the early 1970s. So it's going to be some Eagles, Jackson Browne, Linda Ronstadt, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Loggins and Messina, lots of great stuff performed by the students and faculty of the College Music Department and the Eastman School of Music in Strong Auditorium on the River Campus, 8 p.m., absolutely free of charge. I can't help you with the parking, but if you can get your car parked, get in for nothing.
That's why we need more multimodal transportation. 8 p.m. on Saturday.
On Saturday night, that's right.
Free.
Absolutely free. And lots of great music.
Who's the best lyricist of who's going to be performed? That's what I want to know. Who's the most likely next Nobel winner?
Oh, golly. I don't know. Let's just say that, we may do a Dylan tune that night, so we'll see.
Little
but
tribute.
I don't know. I do like the Eagles' music an awful lot. I know it's not of the same sort of Tony quality, but it's fantastic craft and some wonderful music from those guys.
I promised that I would make sure our community knows of the many various events here of our guests. Roy and James, I hope I'm not missing anything. My Plastic Son, you guys got any gigs there?
No, we do have Nazareth College Rock Ensembles. Will be performing December 3rd, which is a bit of a ways away, but at the Buddha Pub. So two different rock ensembles, they'll be there.
Very good. And James, anything you want to mention before we dive back to Dylan?
Let's see. There's some great plays coming up at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, at the new Guerin Center for the Performing Arts. Lots of stuff happening here in Geneva. Yeah, let's get back to Dylan.
Yeah, there you go. See, and this was my little interlude to say, you know, we try to talk about arts on this program. As Randy Gorbin mentioned, this is a program during Pledge Week. We like to remind you that we are a wide-ranging program. We talked politics and protecting elections last hour. We're talking about the Nobel Prize in Literature and its relation in the art world and what's eligible and what's not this hour with some wonderful voices. And I hope you appreciate that as listeners. And I hope if you're listening right now and you're not a member, you change that by the end of the hour, 454-6300. James, I wanted to let you jump in on some of the wonderful conversation we've been having in the studio here. Where would you want to go next here as we talk about, sort of your way of apprising Dylan and his work and sort of the breadth of his work here? Maybe as we do that, Rob, let's listen underneath this part of the conversation to Things Have Changed from the year 2000. I think from right around the year 2000. Is that right, Roy?
Yeah, I think it was on the Wonder Boys movie. Okay. It was part of the soundtrack.
Okay, so let's listen to some of that. And James, what would you say just about sort of the breadth of this man's catalog?
Well, one thing that I'm always struck is the historic depth and the range of tapping into different. I'm not a musician or a music historian, so I'm just a casual listener. But the range of musical influences that come into play, whether it's Appalachian music or blues or coming out of the gospel tradition, Frank Sinatra and kind of the Great American Songbook, nothing. What Dylan is, I think that's important, is
kind of this encyclopedic American vision of music, particularly, you know, music that is performed by a voice, often could be an unaccompanied voice. So that encyclopedic quality is really probably, at least from my view, probably unique in American music, world music, and also if we translate that over to literature, it's hard to find. I can only think of a few folks who, if you think about music, historic music, musical forms, moving across the spectrum of literary production, whether it's just gross novels, poetry, essays, but moving deeper into different types of formal poetry, it's hard to find somebody who moves across such a vast landscape that Dylan does.
Let's listen to a little bit of Things Have Changed up full here.
People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in time, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Roy Stein, for you, why did you flag this particular song?
I think for me, the I remember seeing Dylan at RIT about 4 or 5 years ago, and he opened up with Maggie's Farm, closed with Like a Rolling Stone, and in between, I didn't know one song.
Hmm.
But, and again, I'm not a huge fan of his of Dylan, but I was dumbstruck by the lyrics. You could hear him quite well. It was a nice PA. You could hear what he was saying. And several times, you know, I just grinned or my jaw dropped at how brilliant his couplets were. And I was just like, wow. You know, so it just showed me this, even with his newer material, you know, that the brilliance still shines through. And with what James said, you know, about, I would say it's not only his musical styles that encapsulate all these different forms of music, you know, Appalachian, right, modern, you know, the typical modern songwriting stuff. It's also lyrically he does the same thing. He draws from all these different traditions and blends them together. So it's just, you know, this song just shows to me, you know, 40 years in, not much has changed.
Even though he's saying things have changed.
Even though he's saying things have changed. And, you know, as an aside, a wonderful story about, I heard Dylan interviewed on XXI a number of years ago, and someone asked him, can he still write like he did in 65, lyrically? And he paused and he said, well, he said, I'm still good, but I don't think so. I don't know where that came from. And that kind of honesty, I mean, even about himself, you know, that kind of honesty, I think, just pervades everything he does.
Yeah, but I'd caution you to believe anything Dylan says. Half of it's true, half of it's Dylan projecting Dylan. I'll bet you if we got him in a moment where he wasn't on, it might turn out that he's an entirely different person than you imagine, and that's okay. I mean, that's what it is to be an artist and project art. You know, I wonder what the others think about why people in music, and especially in popular culture, have taken this Dylan thing as such a tremendous win. And I mean, I said a little bit about this online as well. And I think one reason, and I'm very familiar with it as a professor who goes around giving talks on popular music, especially the Beatles, if you sit with a group of 50 and 60-somethings or 70-somethings and you tell them why the Beatles music is so worthy of serious consideration, you end up basically reassuring their own values and by basically saying, they can say to themselves, you know, I always listened to this music, I always loved it, I always thought it was great, and now here's a university professor, an expert in the field, who's telling me I was right all along. And there's a certain aspect of that that goes with this Nobel Prize, which is that, that, you know, now it proves to people who are always fans that Dylan really is as great as we thought he was. And I have to say that that's probably not the same kind of judgment that the committee was making. In other words, that's kind of a fan justification. I think where this is really significant is there has been, at least in this country, and I'll speak from an American perspective, a real distinction between what we think of as highbrow and lowbrow culture. And for all the reasons that Chad is defending, highbrow culture has had to work hard to maintain its viability in a world that is dominated by commercial concerns. But I would argue that following Thomas Friedman, that we're entering into kind of a flat world of culture in which the stuff that was highbrow is now shoulder to shoulder with the stuff that used to be lowbrow. And it's not that highbrow has lost its prestige as much as it needs to share that prestige with other things. And so Dylan showing up in a highbrow location, a very high-profile highbrow location, I think reinforces a transformation that we're seeing in large parts of our culture. Maybe not within the literary community, maybe in some places not within the musical community, but still an overall kind of closing of the gap between highbrow and lowbrow, where if you'd have told somebody 20 years ago that this singer, Bob Dylan, was going to get the Nobel Prize for Literature, they'd have thought you were crazy. You know, what have you been smoking? And now it's happened. And I think people believe it's happened and like it that it's happened for fan reasons. But I think one of the reasons why it's happening is for reasons that have to do with the changing and the transformation of our culture and the flattening of the cultural hierarchy where those things as high and lowbrow are no longer as distinct as they used to be. Now, it could go entirely back to highbrow next year, and then that's off for 2017.
Chad, do you agree with what he's saying there?
To some degree. I think that's been the case for a long time, too. Like, the person, if there was an American who were going to win the Nobel Prize as a writer for literature, that I would have recommended, it would be Thomas Pynchon, who's famously mixing highbrow and lowbrow stuff in all of his works. And I would have been fine with that because I'm a huge fan, from a fan perspective. I think the thing that's sort of troublesome to me from a business and personal perspective about the world is flat sort of idea is that if the lowbrow is being elevated to be as highbrow as highbrow stuff, the highbrow stuff is still not being funded, not being supported, not making money. It's protected in terms of intellectualism, but when you put it into this realm and you take away one of the few things that was keeping it going, mm-hmm. it's always like on the fringes of just not existing being there. And that's
the other
concerning.
Side of what I'm saying is that's why this rubs so much.
Right.
It's because, come on, this is our bastion. This is how many places do we have in the world where we can just celebrate something for being excellent for the purposes of being excellent? Yeah. And now in comes this other element and it kind of pollutes it maybe I'm overstating it, but there is a sense that there is a impurity in the environment when this kind of thing occurs.
Let me let Roy and James jump in. James, we'll start with James. Go ahead, James.
Well, I go back to my other point, maybe my more negative side of this award to Dylan, and that's, again, as Chad has pointed out, we're a country that does not really support translation, and also we're also not in support of what I do a lot of, and that's poetry. And the work of a lot of artists goes unnoticed and unremarked upon in this country. So I think there is that kind of side of here again is a form of neglect and a kind of discouragement in that side of things, and that sounds more like sour grapes or something. But there is a side that culture is really flattening out to the celebrity culture, and what motivates and changes culture often is, you know, the deeply complex and problematic, the things that really wrinkle and rankle. Claudia Rankine's poetry, for example, or John Ashbery's poetry, since that's my other field. Those are things that really have created new terrains and certainly ethical questions to boot, and political questions. And yet, we tend to celebrate the celebrity side of life in this country, unlike other countries.
Okay. Roy Stein?
Well, I agree with everything James just said. And one of the things, I mean, there is another issue here that's that us as academics aren't really, I don't think, addressing. There is a business perspective here, and the fact that, you know, the author who's named each year is going to see a substantial increase in book sales. The publishing company that they're signed to is going to do cartwheels across the room when they hear that they've won the award. I think the monetary value is $900,000 to $1 million, which, of course, Bob doesn't need that money at all. And so a lot of these authors who are struggling, this money is a way for them to even settle more comfortably into their art. I mean, a lot of them are not making a lot of money. So you've got these economic factors weighed in here, and I'm not sure. I would imagine in the publishing houses of the world, there has to be a little bit of tearing out of the hair saying, I hope this doesn't happen again.
Well, can I offer sort of a naive final point then to that and an addendum to what Roy just said? My hope is that by putting Bob Dylan into the conversation, the people who might not pay attention to the Nobel Prize that much, they might say, hey, I'm going to keep paying attention. And maybe next year when it's something that they view as more esoteric, they're more open-minded to it. That's my naive and optimistic view of it. And maybe that will happen that way. Our guests have been wonderful this hour. And I just want to say, I've got a pile more of your comments that have come in. I mean, John says, I took a wonderful but difficult college class on Dylan's lyrics years ago, and the Nobel validates my professor's interests. So many others weighing in just with their views. Thank you so much to our panel here. You can see Chad Post and meet Chad, and their second annual celebration of Open Letter Books is Friday night at 8 p.m. at the German House. I'll be there, Chad will be there, so I'll see you at Friday.
Absolutely.
And then Saturday night at 8 p.m., John Kovach and the bands are playing where, John?
At Strong Auditorium, Country Rock. If you love the Eagles of Linda Ronstadt, you must be there. 8 p.m. Saturday, Strong Auditorium.
This is like a panel of all the professors you wish you had. Thank you, John. Roy Stein as well, the director of the Music Business Program at Nazareth.
Thank you, Evan.
Great stuff. And James McCorkle, thanks to you as well, James.
Thank you.
All right, let's listen to some Dylan as we close today. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we'll talk with you Wednesday.